That is the call of the small but mighty wren. They're some of the tiniest birds in existence, and their plumage is unassuming, to say the least. Drab browns and grays, they essentially blend in with the background. But just wait till they start singing. Their loud, complex songs, and their tendency to sing them throughout the year, has earned them the title the King of Birds. But on December 26th, the king is dead. From Ireland and the Isle of Man comes the custom of Wren Day, a traditional hunting of the wren followed by celebrations that include disguise, door-to-door visiting and parading, and song. Similar customs have existed in England, Wales, France, and Spain. But Ireland perhaps can claim true ownership of this fine-feathered festivity. It's still carried out there each year to this day, though mercifully, for the sake of the wrens, several things have changed. But why do wrens get their own day? And what's the point of hunting the harmless little fellas? And what does any of this have to do with Christmas? It's certainly one of our most strange and mysterious Christmas customs, a mixture of Celtic mythology, old Christmas traditions, and revenge for giving away secrets. I'm Brian Earle. This is Christmas Past. December 26th falls within the traditional 12 days of Christmas, which begin on Christmas Day and end with Twelfth Night on January 5th. December 26th does some heavy lifting. It's Boxing Day, St. Stephen's Day, and also Wren Day. They are three distinct observances that happen to fall on the same day. Actually, Wren Day and St. Stephen's Day overlap a bit, and we'll come back to that. But first, let's paint a picture of Wren Day. It begins on the morning of December 26th with a group of locals, typically young boys, known as Wren Boys.
So traditionally, the Wren Boys would have went out and they would have hunted the wren, and they would have killed one or multiple wrens.
That's Tiernan Gaffney. He's an assistant keeper of the Folk Life Collection at the National Museum of Ireland. Now, the Wren Boys would carry out their hunt by going to where wrens are often found, perched in a kind of thorny bush with yellow flowers called a furze. Beat the bush to scatter the wrens, throw some rocks and sticks, and, well, soon enough you've got your wren for Wren Day. It was considered especially good luck to be the Wren Boy who delivered the fatal hit. And then it was on with the rest of the festivities.
And then, say, tie them to maybe a long stick with some holly on it, or else if they caught a live wren, they might have put it in a box and decorated it with ribbons, so they would basically go from house to house and look to raise money or maybe even get some drink from the people who were in the houses.
And if the sight of a dead bird perched atop a decorated pole weren't enough, there was also the appearance of the Wren Boys themselves.
They'd be dressed in, you know, disguise, so they might wear old clothes or, you know, put, say, things like coal on their face, and they would sing different songs.
The idea was to dress up in disguise, and several regional traditions existed, but the one kind of disguise perhaps most closely associated with Wren Day is one where the Wren Boy's body and head are covered in straw, like a scarecrow turned inside out. This kind of door-to-door visiting during Christmas time was a very common thing to do starting in the Middle Ages, and remained common into the 19th century. It's the same idea behind caroling and wassailing, or heck, even trick-or-treating. And they're all examples of what's known as a begging visit, meaning there was usually an element of soliciting charity. The Wren Boys sang a wren song as part of the solicitation.
The wren, the king of all birds, St. Stephen's Day was caught in a furze. Although he was little, his honour was great. Jump up, me lads, and give us a treat. Up the kettle and down with the pot, and give us your coppers and let us be off. As I was going to kill an all, I met a wren upon the wall. I took me stick and knocked him down, brought him into Carrick town.
Though the lyrics request a penny to bury the wren, in truth, that penny was put to other uses.
Yeah. So in different instances, they might have done different things. For example, like they may have, say, divided the money up between themselves and brought it home. And then, you know, their parents may have spent it on food or groceries. Or, you know, it may have been spent, you know, in a local public house drinking where a party would be thrown.
And since the Wren Boys went to all that trouble to put on the production, the expectation was when they visited, you would give them some money.
And if you refused to give something to the Wren Boys, like if they left empty-handed, they might bury the wren in your garden, which means no good luck would pass by your door for the next 12 months.
Now, all of this raises an obvious question. Why? What does any of this have to do with anything? And what did the wren do to deserve any of this? Well, the answer is, no one's really sure.
There's a couple of different stories or origins on why, you know, it was once a tradition to actually hunt and kill a live wren. one of the ideas on why we disliked the wren in Ireland is that when our soldiers were hiding in a hedge one day and waiting to attack these Norse invaders, the wren came along and bet its wings on the shield of the Irish soldiers, thus giving up their position and they lost the battle.
And there's another story similar to that one. Remember when I said earlier that Wren Day and St. Stephen's Day overlap? Well, this is how.
And then a similar story is told about St. Stephen, who was one of the first Christian martyrs, and that's, you know, who the day is named after, St. Stephen's Day, and that he was hiding and that the wren sang and gave up his position and he was thus stoned to death.
Apparently, the wren had earned itself a reputation as a tattletaling little sh** that liked to give up people's hiding places. And then there's the matter of another legend involving the wren and an eagle.
And this is quite an old fable about him being the king of all birds. So one day all the birds got together and decided who was going to be the king. And the eagle started flying up in the sky and it looks like he was winning. And just as he got to the very peak of what he could fly to, the wren was actually hiding underneath his wing and stuck his head up over. So then when they came back down, the eagle thought that he was the king, but the wren said, actually, no, when you were at your highest point, I just stuck my head out. So therefore, I'm the king. And sort of part of his punishment for that was that he could no longer fly above that height. So he was, you know, kind of forced to fly no higher than the hedges. That's why in some languages across Europe, he's known as like the hedge king or the winter king as well.
However, the real answer is probably a little simpler. It's very likely to be a combination of ancient Celtic rituals and superstitions that simply carried over even after Christianity came to Ireland around the beginning of the 5th century and eventually melded with Christmas.
You know, some people believe that it comes from, you know, a Celtic mythology and like a winter sacrifice, you know, the wren representing the past year and the robin representing the new year.
Now, as to the question about why the wren boys dress in disguise, well, that's a little more straightforward. Another element of pre-Christian celebrations that eventually melded with Christmas is something called social inversion.
The idea of dressing up in disguise and going out and doing this is, you know, to allow some kind of breaking this sort of social norm and sort of a moment of relief.
Social inversion isn't much a part of Christmas today, but for centuries it was. And no matter what kind of celebration it's connected to, social inversion serves two purposes. First, it allows people to let off steam. And second, by creating a period of topsy-turvy misrule, by the time it's over, people are eager to return to the safety and security of everyday life, thereby enforcing social structure the rest of the time. Even though Wren Day is still celebrated today, it is a kinder, gentler form of Wren Day.
Thankfully, you know, in the past century, it hasn't really been an actual killing of the wren. I think the mid-20th century in Ireland, just so many ways of traditional life were fading. And I guess the idea of actually hunting a live wren and killing it faded with it. And I suppose people became a little bit more ethical and a little bit more environmental friendly. And so, yeah, then it was slowly introduced. And today I would be very surprised to find anywhere throughout the country that would actually still kill a live wren. I imagine it's zero.
These days, the wren is usually a replica and the money raised goes to charity. Well, thank goodness for the wren that a tradition that started out perilously went on to have a happy and endearing ending. Times change, and time heals, and all that. A bit like this Christmas memory from Robin in Canada.
I wanted to share the story of a Christmas Eve that didn't go to plan, but led to one of our family's best, most long-standing traditions, and one of our best family inside jokes. When my sister and I were kids, maybe 5 or 10 years old, we had another Christmas Eve tradition that many families have, and we still do to this day. We would drive around and look at Christmas lights, visiting one house in particular, who would open up their yard to visitors to walk through and enjoy their holiday display, and they called themselves the Ho-Ho House. But this particular Christmas Eve, my mom hadn't been feeling well, and by evening, she was stuck in the bathroom with a very, very bad bug. And my sister and I were pretty disappointed because we were kind of holding on to hope that she might feel better enough to take us around to look at Christmas lights and visit the Ho-Ho House. We kind of sat around waiting, and by 8 p.m., she was still in there, so I knocked on the bathroom door and asked, "Does this mean we can't go to the Ho-Ho House?" And of course, she absolutely was in no shape to take us to the Ho-Ho House. But we were disappointed because Christmas Eve was kind of on hold at that point. So she told us we could each open one gift as a consolation prize. And to be honest, it was probably also to get us out of her hair for a while. So we kind of surveyed the gifts under the tree, and we took our time, looked at them all, shook them all, felt them all, and each decided which one we wanted to open. I ended up opening a Polly Pocket set that I still have to this day. It's up in a tote in my garage, And we now say, does this mean we can't go to the ho-ho house anytime our plans change, no matter what time of year it is? We've even started the Christmas Eve gift tradition with our daughter too, who is 7 now, and enjoys opening her Christmas Eve box every year. So sometimes things don't go to plan, but lead to fun memories in the end. And I hope you all are having a great holiday season and have the merriest Christmas. Thank you so much. Bye.
This episode is arriving on Christmas Eve Eve. And it's the last one of this season's episodes where I tell you the backstory to a Christmas tradition. But you haven't heard the last of me yet. I've still got more Christmas cheer to share. Stay with me all the way till Christmas Day. I hope you've had a wonderful Christmas season and that the best is yet to come. I'll see you soon. Christmas Past is produced in wonderful Willow Glen, California by yours truly, Brian Earle. Thank you so much to Tiernan Gaffney at the National Museum of Ireland. Thanks to Robin in Canada. Thanks also to Lewis Barfoot for allowing me to share her rendition of the Wren Song. Check the show notes for a link to discover more of her music. And as always, of course, thank you for being here. You can drop me a line any time of year, even though this season is winding down. I always love to hear from you. I'm at christmaspastpodcast@gmail.com or connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And join our private Christmas Past Facebook group if you haven't yet, and join our year-round celebration. And hey, if you're really feeling the Christmas spirit, why not help more people discover this show? It's as simple as telling a friend about it or leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. If you do leave a review, I'll send you a Christmas Past sticker and a handwritten Christmas card as my way of saying thanks. Reach out for details, and until we meet again, may your days be merry and bright.